Welcome to the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. This is your host, Amos Medford. Thanks for tuning in today. And we are glad to have Mr. Pete Rogers on the podcast today. He's up in South Carolina, and he is the host of the Christian Outdoors Podcast. And you can check him out there. He's also authored some books that you can find on his website, as well as Amazon. You're going to enjoy hearing him. He's been writing in the outdoor industry for over 20 years. And hunting for a long time since he was a teenager. And you'll hear the story behind all that today. And it's a good one. You'll enjoy it. And it'll be an encouragement to you to listen today. So big thanks to Pete for coming on. And a big thanks to each and every one of you for listening today. We really appreciate it. Appreciate all the support on the podcast, whether it's on Instagram or just listening. Leaving a rating or review, that's one of the best things you can do to support us. We appreciate it. And we do have a brand new Patreon page if you want to support that way, support monthly, anything along those lines, not for everybody, but if you want to support, we appreciate it. And you can check out the link to that in my link tree on Instagram. Hope you guys have a great day and enjoy this episode with Mr. Pete Rogers. We're pleased to be joined today on the Wannabe Hunting Podcast by Mr. Pete Rogers of the Christian Outdoors Podcast. Pete, how you doing today?
I'm doing very well, Amos. Thank you for having me, buddy.
Yes, sir. And you're getting some cool weather up that way, aren't you?
Man, we have snowmageddon going on here in South Carolina, which is, you know, we have 4 or so inches of snow that is starting to melt and refreeze. And so it's kind of got everything shut down, but it's beautiful. I love the snow. I wish we lived somewhere where there was a lot more of it, but we don't. And we get maybe one of these a year, but it's been nice. Yeah.
That's cool. Yep. Down here in Florida, we get one maybe every couple decades or something in this area, but
right.
I like seeing the pictures. It looks pretty.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't even been outside yet. I'm just looking at it from the inside, and it's really pretty. That's really pretty. I tell people I'd like to live where there's snow, and every time I say that, they remind me that I've never had to shovel snow just to go to work or go to church or anything. So I probably would change my mind if I had to do that, and they're probably right. So, right. But just based on where I live, I love the snow. I love how it looks. I like how it changes everything and just how pretty it makes it and how quiet the woods are and everything. And, you know, I've only got to hunt in the snow a few times and really, really enjoyed that. But I do like it. I really do. Winter is my favorite season of the year anyway.
Yeah, that's cool. That sounds like fun. Someday I'll have to hunt in the snow, but, that'll probably be out of state for me. But, anyway, if you don't mind just starting off and telling us how you actually got into hunting.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting story, at least I think. I did not grow up in a hunting household. My dad was not a hunter or an outdoorsman at all. He really enjoyed golf, and I enjoy playing golf as well. But dad was a golfer. That was his only outside activity was playing golf. So we actually moved around a whole lot growing up, and about every couple of years we would move. He was being promoted through his job, and that required us to move a good bit. And I lived in almost every state in the South, including Florida. We lived down in Plantation, Florida for a year and a half, and then we moved up here to South Carolina and kind of stayed here then. My dad was from South Carolina, so he kind of moved back home and changed jobs and began selling insurance. And we moved to a small town called Saluda, South Carolina. And we lived way out in the country. It's the first time we'd ever lived in the country. I was 12 when we moved there, Amos. And I was just captivated by the space. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. We live way out in the country and there's woods and there's a creek. And I really can't point to what was the thing that got me interested other than I think I had a school assignment when we had to read something about Daniel Boone in the early Americas. And I read a biography on Daniel Boone when I was in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. And I started reading everything I could about all those Western explorers, you know. In Daniel Boone's day, Kentucky was West, right? So I started reading about him, and then I started reading about the fur trappers that went out west and the mountain men and the explorers. And I just really got captivated by those stories of adventure and their bravery of just going into the unknown and carving a living out of it. And it just struck something in me. And I remember telling my parents, let me go back a little bit. I've discovered an outdoor magazine at a convenience store called it was Sports Field. I still have the edition. The first one I ever purchased had a doll sheep on the front of it. And it was a 1980 edition. And I read it and I said, man, this is so cool. And I want to start hunting. I want to do what I'm reading about. And I asked my parents to get me a 22 rifle for my 14th birthday. And my birthday is 4 days after Christmas, which is a horrible time to have a birthday, by the way, because well, here's your Christmas and birthday together. And when my brother's birthday is in July, he gets two different opportunities to celebrate. But I told him, I'd love to have this 22 from the Sears Roebuck wish book. There was a 22 caliber rifle in there. And I said, can I get this in October so I can use it during hunting season? And they did that, which really surprised me now as I look back on it, Amos, because like I said, Dad wasn't a hunter at all. Right. And I took that 22 rifle and I bet I have put a million bullets through it. I mean, I started squirrel hunting and just walking out in the woods and learning about nature and just didn't have a clue what I was doing. Yeah. And I saw Amos in this Outdoor Life magazine back in the day that they had what was called the Outdoor Life Book Club. And for $1, you mailed in a dollar bill and they sent you 10 books on the outdoors. And your only obligation was to buy two books at full price in the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. Even as a 12-year-old, I knew that was a great deal. So I mailed in my dollar and I got my books. And it was, I still have them. They're on my bookshelf now. It was How to Track and Find Game, Hunting Small Game, Hunting the White-Tailed Deer, Building Fishing Rods and How to Make Your Own Fishing Lures, The Outdoor Eye, How to Find Game, you know, how to Spot Them, all these things. And I would literally take those books into the woods with me. And I would read it and I would do it. I would read and I would do. And it just really got me going. It's a very different way to pick up hunting because I didn't have a mentor. Both my grandfathers were deceased. I never knew them, either one of them. Mm-hmm. And we lived 12 miles from town. The closest person my age was probably 3 miles away. So there was really just nothing except my own curiosity and my own stubbornness and persistence of just trying to learn it. And I can remember this. I remember it was like eighth grade. So what does that make you, like 13 or so? I was out in the squirrel woods and I saw a deer track. At least I thought that's what it was. I ran all the way home, grabbed my book on tracking and finding big game, ran all the way back there and was going through the pages of the pictures of the sketchings of deer tracks. I said, that is a deer track. When I went to school and told people I'd seen a deer track, you would have thought I was the greatest hunter of all time. There were no deer in our neck of the woods back then. Again, this was the late 1970s. There were no deer in the woods at all. And I saw a deer track and it just really got me excited. And without taking too much of your time, I just continued to squirrel hunt. That's the only rifle I had. That's the only gun I had was that 22 rifle. And my brother joined the Air Force and he had picked up a compound bow, a Ben Pearson 50-pound compound bow from a friend, and he left it when he went to the Air Force. And I wanted to start hunting deer because I'd seen that deer track and was reading about it in these books. And I didn't have a gun to do it with. So I went to the local Ace Hardware. I bought 4 arrows, Easton Game Getters, and a couple of Zwicky Broadheads. And I was out deer hunting, sitting on 5-gallon buckets, walking through the woods, didn't have a clue what I was doing. But so that would have been, I guess I'd have been maybe 16 or 17 at that time.
Right.
But I also got excited about turkey hunting. This is the time that the NWTF was in Edgefield, South Carolina, which is only 30 miles away from where I grew up. So right. I actually killed a turkey before I killed a deer. I think you did something similar yourself, didn't you?
Yep. Very similar.
And it got me really hooked on turkeys, really hooked. I was so excited. I picked up the turkey, ran to the car, drove home, left my call, my gun, everything at the base of the tree. Had to drive all the way back out there to get it. But on the deer, I was 23 years old when I killed my first one. I killed it with that Ben Pearson bow, climbing a cedar tree, sitting on the limbs, because I didn't have a, we were not poor, but we were not a family of means. Right. And so I didn't have a tree stand. I didn't have a mentor as a buddy who said, I think there's some deer across the road from my house. And I was just over there walking around looking. I found a trail. I found a cedar tree. I climbed up in there one morning. And this was the seventh year that I had hunted deer before I actually saw one to shoot. And I shot a little 3-point with my bow. And I've killed a deer every year since, and at least one. And it just completely captivated me, not just deer hunting, but I'm one of those, Amos, I'm an equal opportunity hunter. Whatever's in season, I like to go after it.
Right.
That's a long story. I'm sorry to talk so much about it, but that's really how I got into hunting, and it's just grown from there.
No, you're good. I love the story. I you know, kind of a few stories there kind of tied together, but one, I just love to hear the stories, and it's always awesome to hear how, you know, there are different scenarios that people get into hunting, you know. It's awesome for those guys whose dad and uncle and grandpa take them.
Yeah.
But there's other ways to get into it. So I love hearing it because, you know, that's my story as well. And we talked about that a little bit the other day on your podcast. But I love those stories too, because literally my next question was, you know, what's your favorite game to hunt? And do you prefer gun or bow or shotgun or whatever?
Yeah.
So it kind of leads right into it, because you already talked about starting with squirrels, moving to deer. So that covers it all.
Yeah, it does. But to that question, you know, I get asked that a lot. As an outdoor writer, I get asked that question a lot. What's my favorite animal to hunt? And I haven't hunted all of them, so I can't say this with honesty. But I would say of the animals that I've hunted, turkey's by far my favorite. I love the interaction with turkey. I love that right when you think you got them figured out, you don't. And they're just so challenging, and they're frustrating, and it's exciting that, you know, early spring woods and hearing them thunder in the hardwoods and to gobble and to watch them come in and to see them strut. And it's just the show that turkeys give you is really, really exciting for me. I really like the turkey hunting a lot. I'm not near as good as I like to think I am. I mean, I've taken my fair share of turkeys, don't get me wrong, but when you have the chance to interview and talk to people that are really good turkey hunters, it really is a very humbling thing to see how good some of these people are. But even they will tell you that the turkey is a master of humbling people. Yeah, that's my favorite. Here in South Carolina, kind of like you guys down there in Florida, Amos, we don't have a lot of options.
Right.
We got whitetails, we got turkeys, we got pigs, and then small game. And in the small game is mostly squirrels and rabbits. We don't really have any upland birds except dove. That's a very hit or miss thing on that. And yeah, we have a bear season, but it's, I don't count it. And I've, you know, been fortunate enough to be able to hunt in a lot of different places for a lot of different animals, but turkey is still my favorite.
Right. Yeah. They're hard to beat, you know. Mm-hmm. Had a few opportunities to interact with turkeys and a few with deer, and it's a totally different ball game. You can hardly compare them. You know, it's both hunting, but it's a totally different thing, you know?
It is. And that's one of the things I like about hunting. And I've, I went to Wisconsin this past fall on a grouse hunt. I've always wanted to hunt rough grouse, never had a chance to do it. Got an invitation, and I told my wife, I'm going, because I got an invitation. I don't know anything about it. And it's so different from any other kind of hunting I've done. And that's one of the things that I like about hunting, and hopefully some of your listeners will jump into this, is that I've never understood a single species hunter. I'm a deer hunter, or I just hunt ducks and geese. I'm a waterfowl guy, or I'm only a turkey guy. You're missing so much when you focus on just one single species. I mean, because hunting grouse in northern Wisconsin was very different from anything I'd ever done.
Right.
And you know, hunting whitetails in the South is very different from hunting whitetails in the plains. And hunting waterfowl in flooded timber versus hunting waterfowl in a field, it's all very, very different. And I like those different challenges. I like those different opportunities. And I get to meet great people and to see beautiful land in the process. So I would really encourage people to say, well, I know hunting is not just deer hunting. It is the most popular.
Right.
And it's not just turkey hunting, but I still love squirrel hunting. I still love getting out with my 22 and going through the winter woods looking for squirrels. I do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I totally agree. I think it's all good. It's all different, but it's all good in its own way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, do you still do some bow hunting as well as rifle and all that, or what's your...
I do. If I had to pick one, yeah, archery is my favorite. We actually had this on a podcast. I don't remember who it was, but we were talking about how far is too far. And I can remember in archery hunting, it used to be how close can you get? And now it's how far can you shoot? And to me, the joy of archery hunting is how close can you get? When I can watch a deer blink, and then I know that they're close. When I can, you know, because I have old eyes, right? I'm 58 years old. I have old eyes. So when I can get a deer close enough to watch it blink, I say it's in range now. I like that challenge of trying to get really, really close to the deer, of picking the right tree or the right ground blind spot, the location, working the wind. I love getting close. And so, yeah, I love the archery. I like the challenge of making perfect shot execution. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. I love shooting my rifles too. I've killed a lot of deer with my rifles and I love them. And I can reach out there and touch them. And, I'm one of those, people, Amos, that's kind of anal about my rifle. I reload my own bullets. I make sure that I can shoot the same hole at whatever range I'm going to be hunting at. I want it very, very accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But the flip side of that is when the crosshairs hit the deer, it's dead. Pretty much. Right.
Right. Right.
Whereas with the bow, that ain't the case, is it? No. You still got to execute the shot. You got to be still and slightly apply pressure to your release if you're shooting release, or relax your fingers if you're shooting fingers, and follow through with the shot. And I mean, there's so much more involved. And I really like that. Really like that added challenge. So yeah, I do enjoy the bow hunting a lot. And I do it while it's in season, and I have stands set up there specifically for bow hunting. Right. And I have stands set up for rifle hunting. And so I just do it all.
Yeah, that's awesome. This year, what I did is just when it was bow season, I took the bow, and as soon as it turned muzzle loader, I took the muzzle loader and,
mm-hmm.
went out during rifle, I took rifle. So I haven't connected with a bow yet, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. And there's two other kinds that I like too, and that's muzzleloader and handgun. I started handgun hunting about 10 years ago. And it's because I'm right-handed, but my left shoulder, I had some rotator cuff issues, and the pressure of pulling the bow back on my bow arm was just too much. But I still wanted to hunt close. So I picked up handgun hunting, and I want to tell you what, that is fun. Now you got to make sure it's legal in your state, but it's, I describe it in my writing, Amos, as it's just like bow hunting, just a lot louder. I mean, cause
that's
you,
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause, you need hearing protection when you shoot these big revolvers. And that's what I hunt with, big bore revolvers, mostly a Taurus Raging Hunter or Taurus Raging Bull. I'm a big fan of the Taurus, mm-hmm. Revolvers, 44 Magnums and 454 Casull. But you have to be close. You got to be 40 yards and in, and it takes incredible shot execution, holding that gun very still, slight pressure to the trigger until it breaks, and following through with your shot. It's so much like archery. And that I really enjoy the handgun hunting a lot. I do. And I've been fortunate to take deer and pigs with them and really enjoy that. So if somebody who is maybe they've been archer hunter and they've had an injury or they've gotten older and they don't want to pull back the bow, consider taking up a handgun hunting. It's very, very similar as far as everything that you need to do to the archery hunting. I think it's the closest thing to it.
That's pretty cool. And that's something I don't hear a lot about or see a lot about, but I've definitely heard of it. But that's pretty neat that you can use a handgun and, at least in certain states or areas.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of same. That
it is.
Close interaction. That's cool. Now, I know you've mentioned writing a few times, and I'll probably circle back and ask you a little about that right at the end.
Okay.
But, with hunting and everything else involved in writing, outdoor writing, how did your podcast actually, kind of come about?
Well, I appreciate you asking that because it's a really interesting story. As an outdoor writer, I was actually attending the Professional Outdoor Media Association's annual conference in Louisiana maybe 4 years ago, and they had a seminar. And one of the seminars, well, they had a bunch of seminars, and one of them was on podcasting. And I had heard about podcasting, but didn't know anything about it. Mm-hmm. So I went into this seminar and listened to the presentation and talked to a few people that were early into it in the hunting and outdoor world. And I said, I think that's something I would really enjoy. And I just kind of tabled it. Mm-hmm. But being also a passionate lover of Jesus and someone who loves the outdoors, and as you said, I've been an outdoor writer for over 20 years now. I noticed that a lot of the people that I come in contact with in the industry, whether they're television hunters or other outdoor writers or big personalities, whatever, they're always or mostly people of faith. And I said, I wonder if I can create a platform where they can share their faith, where we can talk about our love for the outdoors and our love for Christ. Because in the magazine world, they're not going to allow you to publish about God because advertisers are scared of that topic. Right. And advertising is what pays for the magazines. And the same thing on the outdoor television. They have to be very careful what they can show and talk about because the networks dictate that.
Right.
Anyway, so I started praying about it. And I started praying about, God, what should I do? Is this something that I want to do? Am I willing to make the commitment? My wife is telling me I already have too many irons in the fire because I have a full-time job and I have a three-quarter time job in the outdoor writing. And now I'm going to add a podcast to it. And she's like, you really don't need to be doing this and be a husband and a father and be active in my church and all these other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I prayed about it for 2 years and, or 18 months or so. And right. During that time I was researching it heavily, what all's involved, what all does it take and all that kind of stuff, Amos. And because I'm one of those that if I want to do it, I'm going to do it the very best I can. I don't want to go at it halfway. I want to go about it and do it the very best that I can and make a commitment to it. So after much study and preparation and prayer, I decided that, yes, I do want a podcast that will discuss about my faith and my love for Christ and my love for the outdoors and how do I do that. And I made a commitment to myself that I was going to do it for 1 week, one episode a week for at least a year and then reevaluate. So that was 50. I was committing to 50 episodes because I knew I was going to take off around Christmas and around Easter. So I said, I'm going to commit to 50 episodes for 1 year and I'm going to do one episode a week. And then I had to come up with a name and a driving force.
Mm-hmm.
And what was my driving force was back in, where are we, 2021 now, 22 now, aren't we? Yeah. So this would have been maybe 14 or 15. As a pastor, one of the things I like to do is read theology. It bores people to tears, but I like it. And I was reading the Westminster Shorter Catechism, which was written in the 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
And The first question of that is a catechism, for the listeners who may not know, is a question and answer teaching tool to teach people about the history of the church, God, the Holy Spirit, Jesus, everything. And it's a question answer format. The church would ask the question, it would teach its students the answer. And the first question is, what is the chief end of mankind? Which basically is, what's the meaning of life, right? What is our purpose? What is the chief end of mankind? And the answer to that, Amos, is the chief end of mankind is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. I thought, yeah, that sounds like a good Sunday school answer. And I went on to the next one. And it came back and hit me again. To glorify God and to enjoy him forever. And Amos, it hit me square between the eyes. And to enjoy him forever. Does that mean, wait a minute, forever? That doesn't mean after we die, where we enjoy him in glory in paradise, heaven.
Right.
We should be enjoying him now. And then I started questioning myself, said, do I enjoy God now? Or am I just acknowledging God and worshiping God and praising God and, let's be honest, tolerating God sometimes? Or am I really enjoying him? And so that set me on a journey to try every single day to intentionally find a ways to glorify, but to enjoy God.
Right.
On a very deep and intimate level every single day. And I wanted that to be the driving force of my podcast, where we talk about, and so my little tagline is, where we talk about all things outdoors and how we can enjoy God every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll get to this later. And out of that came a book also that we'll talk about later, I'm sure. But right. So, in creating the podcast, I have two goals. One is where we talk about our love for the outdoors, but more importantly, we talk about our love for Jesus and how we can recognize him and enjoy him every single day.
Yeah, I like the premise of the podcast. And I think it's pretty, pretty awesome, because the outdoors are a great place to enjoy him every day. And so I think that's awesome to have a podcast, centered around that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's doing, I've enjoyed it. I really have. We are on I just recorded today our 114th episode. So we're almost 2.5 years into it and going strong. I really, really, God has done great things with it. I'm very blessed.
Yep. That is awesome. And we are going to come back here in just a minute to your book, any other outdoor writing that you want to reference, or, folks where to find it, all that type stuff. Come back to that here in just a minute. And we'll kind of close out that way with just anywhere you want to direct.
Sure.
Direct folks to hear the podcast, get the book, read your writing elsewhere. But before we get to that, I just wanted to ask you if you have any advice that either you often give or would give to new hunters, whether it's a mindset, whether it has to do with gear, whether it has to do with strategy, deer hunting, turkey hunting in general, anything that you would say to like a newer hunter, just to help them as they're getting started into hunting?
That's a very good question, because as we said earlier, hunting different animals requires different things and different tactics and techniques and so forth. So I'd say in general, what I would say to a new hunter who just wants to take it up is, don't be afraid to try something new. Okay. And don't think you have to have the greatest gear in order to do it.
Right.
I killed my first deer before I owned guns. All right. I mean, all I had was a .22 rifle and a bow, and I was still able to get it done. And that's not touting myself. It's just being bullheaded and you just ratchet up from there. I would also say is the best learning tool is time in the woods.
Mm.
It really is. I mean, yeah, y'all have heard my story and how I would just take the books with me out there and try them and have to look up tracks and have to see, what is this? What is that? And failure is a great teacher, and making poor shots and making too much noise, all that stuff is a great teacher.
Right.
I would also say patience and realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, when you watch hunting television shows, and I've been on some of those, so I know I kind of what goes on behind the scenes and all that, but they're showing, I'm going to speak deer hunting specifically, right?
Right.
This. They're showing people killing big deer that I've been hunting for 40 something years. I've never seen deer as big as the ones that they kill. I've never killed 140 inch deer. I've never killed anything like that. So I think the expectations some of the TV guys put on new hunters is overwhelming to them. And they're hunting, you know, here in South Carolina, where 110 inch deer is normal, that don't get all hung up in the score of the animal. If it's legal
mm-hmm.
and you enjoy it, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's the same thing with, whether you're a bow hunter, a gun hunter, crossbow, whatever's, if it's legal in your state, country, or province, and you want to do it, go do it. There's too much shaming that goes on among hunters and too much cannibalism going on, where, you know, these bow hunters are just looked down on anybody that uses a rifle, and rifle hunters look down on anybody that uses a crossbow, and crossbow hunters look down on people who use muzzle loaders. And it's just sad.
Right.
And I would just say, please just, to a new hunter, don't be afraid to try something new. Don't be afraid to get out there and do it, and just try to enjoy the process. Like I said, I hunted 7 years before I saw a deer.
Right.
I've been on 3 elk hunts in Colorado. I've never seen an elk yet, mm-hmm. but I still go. Okay.
Yeah.
Failure is part of it. And it's, to me, it's still a lot of fun. I mean, I killed 4 deer this year. Is that right? 1, 2, 3. Yeah. I killed 4 deer. One of those was in Kentucky. So 3 here at home, and I hunted probably 45 days.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I saw a lot of other deer. I didn't have shots, or I didn't want to take them, or I was waiting on something else, or, you know, it was too small, or small meaning like a yearling doe or something like that. Cause I'll shoot a doe in a second. I mean, I love to eat deer meat. I am an equal opportunity. If it's legal and it's in front of me, it's probably going to go in the freezer. Unless it's too small, it's like a yearling or something, you know, or if it's a spike buck and I want to give them a little bit better chance to grow or something. But I know I rambled a little bit. I would also say, no, and I want to jump to some other, start with small game.
Mm-hmm.
I think too many people take too big of a step when they're beginning. I've never hunted. I'm going to hunt deer. Well, why are you doing that? Start on squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you can learn to shoot a squirrel in the head with a .22 rifle, and you can learn to get close enough to do that, you are building skill to become a better overall hunter.
Right.
Yeah. So I would, if you can find somebody to take you to teach you, it definitely speeds up the learning curve. It really does. I encourage hunters all the time to take somebody new with them. Somebody who's new to the sport or inexperienced. I think I said this on your podcast. I took a guy with me this year who's 60 years old and he killed his first deer with me mm-hmm. at 60. You're never too old. You're never too inexperienced. Just get out there and do it. There's a lot of opportunity out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. That's one of, you know, the biggest advice, which I don't give a lot of advice, but my advice is to go, you know, to try it.
Right.
You know, research what you got to do, see what's legal, get your license, all that stuff. And then, you know, do other research online, podcasts, YouTube, you know, there's a ton of stuff you can find out these days and learn these days
mm-hmm.
that way. So do your homework. But when it comes down to it, like you said, don't wait until you have, a $1,500 or $1,700 Hoyt and all this stuff, you know, just run to a pawn shop, see if they got a boat,
right.
And get out there. and start
absolutely learning. Absolutely. It's like when I was finally able to afford a gun, I got a shotgun, a Mossberg 12 gauge, and I hunted deer with a shotgun and buckshot and killed a lot of deer with that before I was able to scrounge up enough money to buy a centerfire rifle. And I bought it from my brother-in-law, you know, and you know, you just take baby steps. You don't have to jump all in order to do it. And I also want to say this, and I think my youngest son is a good example. Mm-hmm. He does not enjoy bird hunting. He said, I am a terrible wing shot. I cannot hit them. I can't hit doves. I can't hit quail. I can't hit ducks. I don't enjoy that. All right. So that's him, but he does enjoy deer hunting and he enjoys squirrel hunting. And so, if you try a type of hunting and you don't enjoy it, don't just give up on all hunting because it's all very different.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I mean, deer hunting can be some of the most boringest things you've ever done in your life. No. And anybody says it's not being honest. It can be so boring. Ken and Amos at times.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So don't judge all hunting based on how boring deer hunting can be. Go try turkey hunting. Go try duck hunting. You know, find somebody that'll take you, or, you know, there's a lot of different outfits out there now. Like the National Deer Alliance is now has a program called Field to Fork, where they're taking adults that have never hunted mm-hmm. and teaching them how to hunt deer and how to process the deer and how to prepare it for the table and the whole, it's a wonderful, opportunity. Oh, and yeah. It's free. You just got to sign up and go. At least I believe it was free last time I looked at it. So you want to go to their website and check into that just to make sure.
No, and it's true. There's a few programs like that.
Right.
Stuff. So that's a great opportunity for folks who are nervous about it. Cause I know that feeling, you know, trying to go out and, you know, it's like, well, if I do kill something, what am I going to do with it? So that's a awesome way to get some hands-on training. So
it is, it is.
Well, it's been good talking to you, Pete. I really appreciate you coming on, and you know, I appreciate your perspective on hunting and this stuff. You know, you've been writing about it for years and have a, you know, successful podcast and all yourself. So I appreciate you coming. Could you just give us an idea where we can read your writing, find your podcast, you know, get your book, anything like that you want to give instruction on?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to do that. Well, as a freelance outdoor writer, I'm in a lot of different magazines. It just depends on what they're buying. But some of them would be the NWTF Turkey Call Magazine, Inside Firearms, Inside Archery, mm-hmm. The Game and Fish publications. From time to time, I'm in those for Fish and Game. So, you know, there's a lot of different ones that I'm selling to as far as that goes. But books are all available on my website and on Amazon. My website is christianoutdoors.org. Mm-hmm. And there you can find all my books there. I have a turkey hunting book that was actually the outdoor book of the year in 2019. It's called So You Want to Hunt Turkeys. And it's more about the why we hunt turkeys than the how-to. There are how-tos in there, chapters, but that's a hardback collector's edition book, and it's available there. I have other ones on there as well. The Hunting Club Bible. If you've are in a hunting club or thinking about joining a hunting club, this is a manual that will teach you how to create and sustain a successful hunting club. Mm-hmm. And then I have my Christian book that came from the podcast called Do You Enjoy God? It's 12 Steps to Enjoying God Every Day. And all of those are available as ebooks or as paperback books, but the turkey book is hardback. But the other ones are paperback. They're all available on my website, or you can go to Amazon and just search under my name, Pete Rogers, that's Rogers. Awesome. And you can find them all there. And the podcast is Christian Outdoors Podcast, and it's available on every podcast platform out there, Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, Weezer, Deezer, all of them. It's available out there. So I'd love for you to check us out and to subscribe to it.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate it, Pete. And, Definitely some stuff for me and everybody else to check out, you know, check out your books and give your podcast a listen. So I appreciate it. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me, Amos. I really appreciate it, buddy.
Yes, sir. Amos here with the Wannabe Hunting Podcast. Thanks so much for listening today. I really appreciate it. And a big thanks to Pete Rogers for coming on today. Enjoyed talking with him. Check out the stuff he has going on with Christian Outdoors. And thanks again for tuning in. Thanks again for the support, for the ratings, the reviews, and just stopping in to listen. That helps a ton. And we appreciate it. Hope everybody has a good rest of your week. Hope you're getting some good winter weather and enjoying it. And staying safe out on the roads and all that good stuff. If you're somewhere where it's snowy, it is not here in Florida, but it's pretty chilly. So hope you guys have a good rest of your winter. If you're still closing out a deer season or waterfowl, good luck. And we'll look forward to turkeys here coming up before too long. Thanks for listening. As always, honor God, work hard, and keep hunting.